So we're used to hearing about how the foods that we choose to eat can help us keep the pounds off, help us maybe feel more energy, help our bodies fight infections, or even reduce our risk of cancer. Well, in this month's Smart Nutrition segment, we're going to consider a part of the body not usually associated with diet, our brains. Monica Reinagel is a licensed nutritionist who blogs at quickanddirtytips.com. She joins me this morning to talk about an experimental diet that she says might be able to keep our brains healthy and sharp as we age, and maybe even protect against diseases like Alzheimer's. Hey, Monica, good to see you.
Good morning, Tom.
So what's this MIND diet? What's that all about?
The MIND diet was sort of a hypothesis that some researchers from Rush University put together. And they wondered if they could cobble together a dietary prescription that could reduce the risk of Alzheimer's. So they kind of mashed up a couple of diets that we've talked about before, the Mediterranean diet, the DASH diet, and then they sprinkled in some special sauce. They really wanted to focus on specific foods and nutrients that seem to have a particular connection to brain health. And things like berries, we've heard before about how eating berries can maybe benefit the brain. So they put together this sort of recipe, and they thought, if you ate this, maybe you could protect yourself. And then they tested that by looking back at some existing dietary records. And sure enough, they found that the people whose diets conformed most closely to their prescription had half the risk of Alzheimer's disease as the people whose diets were the furthest away from their prescription.
How do they begin that process? In other words, how do they determine or even guess that a particular food, berries, for example, are related to brain health in particular, as opposed to, I don't know, cardiovascular health or orthopedic health or muscular health or something? I don't understand that.
Right. And they may discover that they're related to all of those things as well, in particular cardiovascular health, because circulation and heart function is connected to brain function, things that increase blood flow to the brain. But the way they figure these things out, we have vast databases of dietary intake records that we've collected through these big studies. And so what they do is they mine that data. This is big data at work. They go through and they pick one thing and they say, let's see who ate the most fish. And then those same people that we have the dietary records, we also have extensive medical histories that we've been collecting for decades. And we say, okay, so we'll sift out all the people that ate the most fish, and then we'll see, you know, how they did in terms of various diseases. And they've put together these correlations. But there's the magic word, Tom. These are correlations. And as we all learn in introductory statistics, correlation is not causation.
Yeah.
It's just a reason to look into it further.
So there are 10 brain healthy foods that they recommend, mm-hmm. and actually 5 foods that they recommend that you avoid.
That's right.
It probably turns out that these 10 foods are just good in general, right? I mean,
yeah,
maybe they're good for your brain, but they're also just good in general.
Of course. These are very familiar suspects. It's things like berries that we talked about, vegetables, especially the leafy green kinds.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. And fish, whole grains, legumes, nuts. You've heard this list before. Olive oil, little bit of red wine. So that, you're right, is what's the difference between that and every other prescription for healthy eating? Not that much. These are tweaks. And then the 5 foods that we're supposed to be avoiding are red meat, butter, cheese. Boy, they're really buzzkills, right? Red meat, butter, cheese, pastries, fast food, and fried foods. Here, though, I think the evidence might be a little shakier, especially for the cheese and the butter, because that is based...
Is it because of the saturated fat content?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The researcher said, hey, we think that saturated fat might contribute to the risk of Alzheimer's disease, so let's limit any food that's particularly high in saturated fat. But when you look at the literature, that connection is pretty tenuous. There are some studies that seem to show that the people who take in more saturated fat have more Alzheimer's disease, but there's almost as many studies that show that there is no connection. So that whole advice to avoid these foods is, you know, pretty shaky. And the other thing is that when they did this analysis, they couldn't really sift out which of these 15 factors, the 10 plus and the 5 minus, which of them were contributing the biggest amount of the effect. It could be that a few of them are just along for the ride, not really mattering one way or another.
And of course, it's important not to view this data in silos. kilos either, because there's information, for example, I think that says that saturated fat can be associated with prostate cancer or breast cancer as well. I mean, it's not just brain stuff. I mean, these foods, you know, there's an interplay, you know, for all sorts of things that could go wrong with us, right?
Well, and there's an interplay in another way. Just because saturated fat might not necessarily be harmful, if your diet is entirely saturated fat or very high in saturated fat, that's that much less, say, olive oil that's in your diet, and so you're missing out on the benefits. So whenever we're eating more of something, we're usually, hopefully, eating less of something else, and so we need to look at both sides of that.
How about coconut oil? You've looked into this a little bit, too.
Well, ironically, because coconut oil is almost 100% saturated fat, but it's enjoying a sort of a folk celebrity status as something that could actually promote brain health. This is pretty speculative. In fact, there's some protocols suggesting that we could treat Alzheimer's patients with coconut oil, and this seems to fly directly in the face of this other recommendation to avoid saturated fat. Again, there's some evidence to support this, but I think we need to tiptoe in pretty carefully here, especially before we start using large amounts of a fat that could create a lot of imbalances in the overall diet.
So one of the foods that strikes me that is going to be an important thing, because it's a popular food. I mean, we've heard the case against red meat, for example. Mm-hmm. We've even talked about the wide definitions of what red meat is. But cheese.
Yeah.
I mean, they single out cheese in this one. And it, basically, what is the case against cheese?
I heard from so many people.
Please help me make the case for cheese. That's right. Because
okay.
I love cheese.
I'm going to help you make that case. They singled out cheese because of the saturated fat content. But there's a very interesting, you know, this diet drew from the DASH diet. That's something I'm sure you've heard of. It's got a very, very long record. And the traditional DASH diet also limited all high-fat dairy products. And it works like gangbusters. But a couple of years ago, they did a little test, and they had people follow the entire DASH prescription, except they got to eat full-fat dairy products. It worked just as well. Mm. So I think what we're seeing here is that in the context of an overall healthy diet, you know, some higher fat dairy products doesn't seem to throw you under the bus. And I think that might be some good news for the MIND diet.
And in terms of the evidence, we should point out that this was not a controlled study. And what does that mean?
Right. That means they didn't tell people what to eat or what not to eat and then see how they did. These people had already eaten their diets. They were looking back at existing records, again, just mining the data. So they weren't, it wasn't a controlled experiment. It was an observational study.
All right. So they didn't say, okay, this group, you're going to eat like this for 6 months, right, and this group, you're going to eat like that, and then compare the
right
results.
And then there's always, you know, variables like the people that had the best diet also exercised more.
There you go. I've heard that before, and we'll hear it again next time we see it. Thanks, Monica. Appreciate it. Monica Reinagle is our nutrition diva. She's a licensed nutritionist who blogs at quickanddirtytips.com. She joins us regularly here on Maryland Morning for our smart nutrition segments on diet, health, and well-being. We've got links to Monica's blog with more information about diet and cognition on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Coming up Friday, analysis of the final day of the Republican National Convention and a look ahead to the Dems meeting next week with Adar Aira, Chris Kafalis, and Richard Cross, who's been in Cleveland all week writing speeches for the convention. And we'll meet Dr. Martin Luther King's barber. Nelson Mauldin will be in town for an event at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, and I bet we'll hear some great stories. That's all coming up Friday morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, for Nathan Sterner and the entire Maryland Morning team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Garrison Keillor's up next with the Writer's Almanac. Have a great day.